Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. On the way this week, we're going to run down all our favourite announcements from this year's Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. And we've got the details on Apple's new iPhone, MacBook Pros and the iPad.
Love it, love it, love it. Sounds like we've got yet another packed episode, Susie. But before we get into it, a big thanks to CX for sponsoring this very podcast.
Yeah, a quick question for everyone. How much tech do you reckon you've got lying around in your house right now?
Well, I've got about 7 phones in my drawer. And that's just in this room. Maybe 17 consoles or so.
Well, maybe you've heard of somewhere called CEX. That's where they come in.
Yeah, because instead of letting that stuff gather dust, you can trade it in. Phones, tablets, games, cameras, laptops, they'll take the lot.
And you can walk away with cash or credit to knock money off something else that you've had your eye on.
Yeah, and the clever bit, everything they sell is fully tested and refurbished. So you're not gambling on mystery tech from the internet.
Plus, it all comes with a 5-year warranty, which is longer than most brand new gadgets that you buy.
So whether you're upgrading, downsizing, or just curious what your old kit's worth.
Yeah, head to webuy.com or drop into your local CEX and have a look. Your junk drawer might be worth a lot more than you think. Now, before we dive in, can I ask you a huge favour, please? If you're enjoying the pod, can you please hit follow, subscribe or tap the like button wherever you're listening or watching right now, because it genuinely makes a huge difference. It helps more people discover the podcast and it means that you'll never miss an episode either when it lands. Right, Jace, over to you. What have you been up to on the last week?
Two things I need to talk about that I've been absolutely loving. Okay, so first of all, many people know that Resident Evil Requiem launched in the time between our last recording and this one. And this game is getting some big love from the gaming community right now. You know, I've been playing that franchise since back in the day. Was it 1996, I think it was? On the PlayStation, somewhere in the late 90s. And it absolutely blew people's minds the first time that kind of zombie hordes were rendered in a way that was genuinely eerie and scary. So anyway, there were glowing reactions everywhere, forums, socials, YouTube reviewers and the like. And there are already whispers about a potential Game of the Year accolade.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure about that. I'm all in for Ark Raiders, but there you go. And that's in a year, hopefully, where we're also getting, God, fingers crossed, Grand Theft Auto 6. So that's a bold conversation to be having this early in an incredible year for gaming. But honestly, having played it, I love it. I love the old, obviously, the classic Resident Evil. And that DNA, I believe, from my perspective, although ultimately it's quite subjective, is very much evident in the new title. And it's got that slow creeping anxiety, Suze, that the franchise
that
really
we have in the real world right now
famous for. Yeah. And it builds, you know, giving you a sense audibly or just in terms of the atmosphere of the game and the lighting that something horrible is about to happen. And when I say horrible, I mean, I'm guessing we're going to be dropping visuals over this review, right? It doesn't get more horrible. Enough on that. Hopefully I've painted a picture. I don't think that the enthusiasm for this game is misplaced, to put it that way. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, the Virtual Boy is now available for Nintendo Switch and Nintendo Switch 2 via some online content that you download, and two pieces of hardware, one a kind of almost exact replica of the original, albeit where you slot in your Switch to get the visuals working, and also a cardboard version, which has been really well reviewed. Now, I've not got hands-on with these, which is ironic given that I'm such a retro head, although our producer has, and so what he's told me is that they've managed to recreate that distinctive red and black 3D look that was, it still is unique to the Virtual Boy, but without the neck strain or the regret, by which I think he's probably talking about the strange stand, although you do get that. And from what I've seen, it's identical to the original. I think what he may be getting at is that you can, certainly with the cardboard version, hold it to your face. In fact, that's the only way you can play it. And cleverly with that cardboard version, which is getting rave reviews, actually, because it's so inexpensive compared to the the plastic rendering of the original that you can also buy, they've just released. You can control the game content via the Joy-Cons on the side, left and right. So it's quite intuitive, that. But the visual experience, apparently, even on the cardboard version, is really, really good. So it's a weird time capsule, isn't it? It's a weird recreation. We've seen lots of mini consoles, haven't we? Mini Atari 2600s and mini Atari 800s and whatever. This isn't mini. It's a full-size thing. In fact, it's a shockingly realistic version of what the original was, complete with stand and so on. I think it's pretty novel. It's definitely not for everyone. It's not going to be a big seller, but I love how niche it is, and I personally would like to get hands-on. So, Tom, producer, I know you're listening, wherever you are in gadget land. Maybe you could send it to me and I can play with it.
That anything nostalgic we know at the moment is hitting hard, isn't it, really? So essentially what you're saying is that you've gone in a week from being hunted by unspeakable horrors to revisiting one of the most odd consoles ever.
But that's me. That's my week. Susie, what about you?
Well, I have just got back from Thailand, been doing my MotoGP race. So a little bit jet lag. But after you talked about the leaks last week, I did spot the full announcement of Samsung's Galaxy S26, and the phone itself was what most people expected, really. But one feature in particular has got people talking: privacy display. Now, privacy display uses a combination of new display hardware and clever software to narrow the viewing angles. So when you're looking at the phone head on, everything looks normal, but from the side, it appears to be blacked out. So anyone trying to glance at your screen on a train or a cafe or whatever won't be able to see anything, which sounds brilliant. Passwords are protected, banking apps can be hidden, even message previews can be blacked out so the person next to you can't see who's texting. But this is where it gets interesting. One of the clever things about it is you can choose what gets hidden. Password and pins, completely logical. Banking apps, absolutely sensible. You can even hide notification previews, so you'll see the message, but the person across the table won't. Of course, lots of people already manage notifications carefully. Some turn off previews entirely. Some disable lock screen notifications. Some put their face down. Some silence it and took it away, blah, blah, blah. So privacy display might protect your screen from prying eyes. But maybe the real question is, should we be protecting our messages or protecting the moment we're in? What I mean is, basically, are we on our phones too much? Like, why do we need to be looking at them all the time in the public if we're having to put privacy displays? I mean, okay, sometimes I get it and it is good to use, but I just think we're, you know, like this. In fact, you know what? I went for a run around the park the other day because I'm trying to do couch to 5K. Getting there. Yeah, thank you. And there was a lad, he was about 10. I'm going to be honest, he was pretty overweight and he's sitting on this bench and he's just looking down at his phone. And the sun was out and it was a beautiful day. And I wanted to be able to say to him, hey, dude, you know, put your phone in your pocket for half an hour and have a walk round. When I came back from my jogging, he was still there on his phone. And it just kind of summed up modern society a little bit for me. I mean, he might have only had half an hour and that was his half an hour in the day. But
yeah, exactly,
I doubt it. But it's just that, really. It's just, you know, protecting the moment. It's just living by the moment. Do we need to constantly be on our devices?
I don't think I've ever worried about someone looking at my phone, ever. Like, ever. I don't care. Like, is it... I mean, a friend of mine has a privacy screen that he sticks onto it, that, you know, third-party one that he stuck on his phone.
Yeah.
I mean, he is in IT, so maybe he's dealing with clients' data, so it's part of that sort of duty of care to clients. But me personally, I've got no need for that.
Well, I don't deliberately open things like bank apps and anything very private if I've got someone sitting next to me.
Right, we've got something huge for you. The brand new Gadget Show competition is now live, and the prize is a very tidy £5,000 to spend at CEX.
£5,000 on tech, that's amazing.
And here's the really important bit. Your odds are really good. Back in the TV days, millions of people were watching. If we'd run a competition then, your chances would have been, well, let's be honest, quite slim.
However, Patreon is a much smaller club. It's a lovely gadget-loving corner of the internet, which means, statistically, your chances are far better than they would have been back in the day.
Fewer people, £5,000 prize. I like those odds.
To enter, you just have to head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and join one of our paid tiers, which start from the price of a cup of coffee. We've got three: light, mid and max.
Light gets one entry, mid gets you three entries, and max gets you the full five entries. So if you want to boost your chances, that's the way to do it.
Once you've signed up, send us a direct message with the answer to this question. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006, or D, 2007?
But remember, you're not just entering a competition.
You'll also get ad-free listening, early access to episodes, bonus content.
And if you're a Max member, you unlock the complete Gadget Show archive. Over 20 years and nearly 500 episodes. That's a serious binge.
And the cat suit. Don't forget that.
And the cat suit. And all the accidents.
All the stitches. Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and get involved. Full terms and conditions are linked in this episode. As well as Samsung's Galaxy S26, we also talked about Apple last week, as they promised a big week after the announcements have been revealed. They weren't kidding, really. A flurry of stuff, including a brand new entry-level iPhone, which is quite interesting, a refreshed iPad Air, and finally, new MacBook Pros with upgraded silicon. Just to break it down a little bit, Apple has given its most affordable iPhone a solid glow-up in the 17e, while keeping the starting price at £599. Storage is double. Base model now starts at 256 gig, and it also gains MagSafe support with wireless charging speeds up to 15 watts. That's twice as fast as the previous 16e. No big shakeup with the design. It looks almost identical to last year's model. And it appears that Apple is sticking with the same 48 megapixel fusion camera system. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Pre-orders open now and it lands March the 11th. It'll be available in black, white and soft pink across more than 70 countries.
So no orange.
No orange, which I love. It's, that orange.
Yeah, I love that orange, the burnt orange on the iPhone.
It's fabulous. I mean, it's probably Pro. Also because I'm a Wolves fan. Next, the iPad Air, which is now powered by the M4 chip. That's the M4, which technically keeps it a generation behind iPad Pro's newer M5 chip. But realistically, for most people, it's fine. It's more than powerful enough. It's ideal for streaming, browsing emails and handling heavier tasks like video editing, much better than the old Air models. The RAM's increased as well from 8 to 12 gig. And despite rising memory prices, Apple has managed to keep the pricing the same. So the 11-inch starts at $599, the 13-inch at $799, and both come with 128 gig of storage. Apple says the performance is up to 2.3 times faster than the M1 iPad Air, with over 4 times faster 3D rendering thanks to ray tracing. Pre-orders open now and it hits 35 countries March the 11th. It comes in blue, purple, starlight and space grey. Right, finally then, heavy hitters. The new MacBook Pro models with M5 Pro and M5 Max chips have arrived. Available in 14 and 16-inch versions, these machines bring serious power upgrades, but also higher prices. So the 14-inch can be configured with an M5 Pro or M5 Max. The M5 Pro offers up to 18 CPU cores and 20 GPU cores. The M5 Max goes even further with 18 CPU cores and up to 40 GPU cores. That said, you are getting more for your money. Storage is not only doubled. Apple says it's twice as fast as before. You also get Wi-Fi 7 and Bluetooth 6 via the new N1 chip, plus up to 24 hours of battery life. So it's slightly unusual timing. Apple announced the M5 chip last autumn, but the MacBook Pro updates have landed months later and somewhat quietly compared to previous launches. The pre-orders open now and shipping starts March the 11th.
And to close out this week's news from Apple, Susie, the big story from them was, of course, the MacBook Neo, Apple's long-rumoured budget laptop. So this is really quite new and certainly from our perspective quite unexpected. Starting at £599, the Neo is Apple's first serious attempt at a genuinely affordable MacBook. And as Apple is pushing the price of the new MacBook Air M5 up to £1,099, this thing lands at almost half the price of the very recently announced Air. Under the bonnet is Apple's A18 Pro chip. Wait for it. Yes, you're right. It's a phone processor, the same processor used in the iPhone 16 Pro. It's not as powerful by any means as Apple's M-series laptop chips, but it still packs a 6-core CPU, a 5-core GPU, and a 16-core neural engine, which should more than be enough for everyday tasks like browsing, streaming, and most office work. So for £599, you get 256 gigs of storage and 8 gigs of RAM, which is not exactly generous. But if you spend another £100, you'll get 512 gigs of storage and Touch ID added to the keyboard. The design, though, of the MacBook Neo is classic Apple. You get a solid aluminium body, a 13-inch display, a 1080p webcam, two USB-C ports, so they're not Thunderbolt, headphone jack, and side-firing speakers with Dolby Atmos. Okay, so MagSafe is missing from charging, so one of those USB-C ports will have to handle power. Colour options, silver, indigo, something they call blush and citrus, and the keyboard is colour-matched to the case. So a really interesting announcement, also announced in a relatively non-traditional way by Apple. The trackpad, I should just mention that as well, more old school in terms of the force touch system with haptic feedback, and it actually physically clicks, which is quite nice. It might be exactly the machine that Apple needs right now, you know, a MacBook priced to tempt Windows users in that £500 to £1,000 laptop bracket. Pre-orders are open now and it will launch on the 11th of March.
Right, excited to talk about Mobile World Congress. Obviously, haven't been there for many, many years. What you got?
It's basically the Glastonbury of mobile tech, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Mobile
World Congress happens in Barcelona, where it takes over the whole city, to be honest. And what's great about it is every year it feels like there's a drift. So you get really interesting other types of non-mobile phone tech on the peripheries. But first of all, we will keep it to mobile phones, which is, you know, the central narrative of that event. And I think one of the headlines was one of my personal favourite brands, Nothing, and the Nothing Phone 4A. So they've built a reputation, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, for affordable but really stylish, slightly left of field designs for their phones, with beautiful use of LED light and translucent materials and things like that. And the 4A looks like continuing this trend, which I'm particularly pleased about. Mm. We've had our first proper look at it on the show floor, but it was kind of trapped behind glass. They're keeping it close to them, to their chest. It's coming in four colours, black, blue, white and pink. And honestly, Nothing do colour really well. A bit like Apple, actually. Full announcement lands on March the 5th, so we're a bit early for that. But I'm hoping to get some hands-on time as soon as I can. And when I do, I'll report back to you lot. Also, the Honor robot phone is possibly one of the standout wild stories from the show floor. It's because it's got a built-in camera that's on a tiny robotic, arm. It's nuts. So just to give you some sense of it, it extends out when you want to shoot photos or video, and because it can move independently, it can actually follow you around reasonably well. So it's a bit like having a DJI Pocket, you know, sort of style gimbal camera, but built into your phone. So that's obviously aimed, I'm guessing, at vloggers or content creators. But it's a cool piece of innovation, and it's the sort of thing that keeps the show buzzing, gets it in the headlines, you know. No word yet on that particular device repricing or availability, but as concepts go, pretty stand out. And next up, gaming handhelds is a sector of that particular show floor experience that I'm always keen to keep appraised of. And Lenovo have caught headlines with something called the Lenovo Legion Go Fold. And as the name suggests, it's a foldable gaming handheld. So closed, it has a 7.7-inch screen. Open, that becomes a massive 11.6 inches. And say, just like the Switch 2, you can snap controllers onto the sides. So that's interesting, a kind of Switch-inspired gaming portable from Lenovo. I think that's really, really cool. At the moment, from what I could discern, it's still a concept. So don't reach for your wallet just yet, gamers. But it shows how this content category, and Lenovo as a design company, it shows sort of where they're going.
Yeah.
It's very, very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. They sponsored Ducati, actually. I wish they'd bring their stuff to the paddock so I could have a little play. Right, just, you know, if anybody's watching. Next, Leica has...
We love Leica.
Yeah, well, they've teamed up with Xiaomi for the Lights Phone 3. This thing is built for serious mobile photographers. So you're getting a 50 megapixel, 1-inch sensor, and that's massive in phone terms. Yeah. Plus Leica's LOFIC tech for more natural looking shots. And there's a manual control ring around the camera module that alone will make photography purists absolutely smile from ear to ear. And I'm delighted to hear that foldables were at the event too. Hooray!
Okay, give us the foldables rundown, Suze.
Okay, well, the Honor Magic V6 is now officially the thinnest foldable on the market. It's 8.75 millimetres thick when folded shut, which is comparable to many traditional slab smartphones, and around 4 millimetres when unfolded flat. So if you don't, you know, work in millimetres, that's really, really skinny. And it's got 6,660 milliamps per hour battery, a Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5 chip, stylus support, and a 7.95 inch inner display.
Oh, yeah, I'm more interested now.
Oh, you're getting into the foldables now, aren't
you? I am.
Because you're loving all the tech in them, that's why.
When you said it's the thinnest foldable or whatever you said in its category, that excites me. Something that doesn't weigh the back of my trousers down, yeah. So I walk through the airport like a teenager showing my pants, which is kind of where I'm at the moment with my current phone. Something that doesn't do that is attractive to me. And then you say things like, you know, you've got a stylus. Okay, so now I can start to use that two-screen setup. Yeah, and interesting. I'm slowly coming across to your side, Suze.
Okay. Finally, possibly the nerdiest thing on the floor, the Lenovo ThinkBook Modular AI PC. So it's a modular laptop concept with not one but two detachable screens. You
Brilliant.
Can configure it in multiple ways, effectively carrying two mini monitors with you wherever you go. Will it actually... Oh, it sounds so fantastic, doesn't it? Will it actually ever launch, though? I don't know. But that's MWC, isn't it, in a nutshell?
Yeah.
Part polished product, part futuristic dream, and always a glimpse at where tech may be heading. And honestly, I think that's why we love it so much.
And just like that, we're done for another week. What a packed lineup that was, Susie. That's your Gadget Show podcast wrapped.
Yes, but before we power down, time to give a little love to the legends keeping this show alive, our brilliant Patreon crew.
Okay, here we go. Massive thanks and heroic levels of appreciation to BZ Smith, Yusuf Ali, Ian Wilson, Sam Supersonic, Justin Strong, Walkerman, Barry Music Tech Info, Brian Mark Wild, Barclay Thompson, Stephen Brandom, Zamir, Andrew Brandt, Jared, Mark, Fluky D, Paul Sharrock, Colin Taylor, Alan Williams, Chris Hughes, and I know that I've said this right because I've been onto the Patreon app and Martin told me, yes, you did it right. He said that in the comments. Martin Budnarowski, absolute icons. A lot of you.
And big cheers as well to Peter Pinner, Timmy Bigger, Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn, Dean Day, Chris Cool, Stephen Green, Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Eddington and Danny Rushton.
And believe it or not, something in this competition must be working because we haven't finished. Enormous shout outs to Tall Man with Glasses, Skewy Cat, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Daryl McCracken, Andrew Bamford and Duncan Bell. Top tier support. We salute all of you. Thank you so much.
If you fancy joining this fine band of tech enablers, you'll get bonus episodes, behind the scene extras, ad-free feed, and you'll be in the draw for the rather tasty £5,000 CEX prize fund.
Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow. Sign up and become officially awesome.
Don't forget, our inbox edition is just around the corner.
That's it. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.